and want to get right to our next guest here on Newsline on WICC. And we say a big welcome to the Connecticut State Attorney General, William Tong. Attorney General, thank you so much. Nice to meet you on the radio.
Bridget, I'm surprised we haven't done this yet.
I know.
I hope it's the first of many.
I hope so, too. Wow, a lot to talk about. Okay, let's start with the comments. I was reading the article in the CT Mirror where you're essentially quoted as saying, we are preparing for a storm to hit post-election.
Yes.
First of all, I want to talk about the potential for a storm. But you also said there that you believe, I think we need to set it up with this, that Kamala Harris will win. You are a Democrat. Why do you feel that she is going to win this? The polls sure are tight.
Yeah, I believe that she's run a superior campaign. And I don't just say that. I think, most campaign people will tell you, experienced campaign people, that a strong get-out-the-vote operation is worth a point or two in the margin. And she's got a strong get-out-the-vote operation, whereas I think her opponent has almost no get-out-the-vote operation. I think that women, I think that never-Trumper, center-right, moderate Republicans, much like the sorts of Republicans we see here in Connecticut, and I think young voters, and I think Biden voters from 2020, they're not going to suddenly decide that they want to vote for the other guy. So I think with all of that together, and many other reasons, I think she's going to win.
Okay.
That's my view, obviously. That's my view as a Democrat and an elected official. But it's informed by, 18 years of elective experience. I've been through many, many campaigns and many battles, and this is my intuition.
Right. And you know what? I mean, I think a lot of political experts would agree with you that it can come down to one of the factors that it can come down to is a really effective ground operation, to be sure. OK, so let's talk then about the morning after the election. Are you preparing for a storm? What do you mean by storm potentially?
Oh, I think it's going to be a hurricane.
Oh boy, Cat 5.
I've seen this movie before and was a part of it in 2020. It's hard to believe that I've been Attorney General now for 6 years. But in 2020, we were prepared for post-election battles, and they materialized, going all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference, however, it's not apples to apples. The difference in 2020 was that we were in the middle of COVID. And so a lot of the challenges were related to COVID era, COVID focused restrictions for voting accommodations, right? Because remember, we couldn't vote in person. So there's a lot of that. And so we don't have that this time, or at least in the same amount or same intensity. So I can't tell you where and how these lawsuits are going to come and how they'll hit us, but they're coming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, you're already seeing, the Trump campaign in their messaging, setting up claims of fraud, setting up claims to impugn the integrity of election results. And we know from 2020 and from audits of elections and from most experts, does stuff happen? Yes. Does it impact the results? As a general matter, no. And stuff happens on both sides. So when you run an election of, 150 million people, does it go perfectly? Of course not. If you run an election of 100 people, right, in a cafeteria, it would not go perfectly.
Right.
So, but the suggestion that America's elections are at their core unreliable or fraudulent is just wrong. It is misleading, and not only that, but it greatly undermines our democracy and our country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder, and as you say, we don't know, right? We don't know what the claims might be in any potential lawsuits,
right?
Or where? It is scary, though, Attorney General Tong, to think about, And we just mentioned this with our last guest, a political science professor, about the violence and fires out west at some ballot locations. You would think that if, you know, if there's anything that doesn't go perfectly smoothly, that that might give somebody an opening, right?
Yes, and I, you may know, Bridget, that I spend a lot of time on multi-state matters, which means when the states get together and go after big tobacco or right. the opioid and addiction industry or the social media companies. And because of that, I spend a lot of time with my Republican colleagues. And I was just traveling with them. We travel a lot to meet in person because there's no substitute for looking each other in the eye. And we had some really, I will say, this is pre-election day, and I know that, but we had some really good, honest conversations with each other. And many of us committed to each other that we are going to speak out against violence and try to protect people against election-related violence and civil unrest. We're not naive about it. We think it can happen, which is why we need to speak up and encourage people to calm down. And nobody wants to see a repeat of what happened on January 6th, at least me and my colleagues don't. And I said to them, look, we're gonna have a fight. And I think everybody understands that. I don't think we should be having a fight, but I can't stop some of my colleagues from starting one. But that being said, I said, we got to leave the door open, if not the front door, a back door, right, for us to talk and for us to come back together. And frankly, I wanted to be with them because I wanted to remind them that, you know, I'm their friend and I'm an American, I'm a human being. Like, we do a lot of work together. Just remember that we're in this together.
Right, right. I mean, it's great to hear that, you know, that you, as you say, do work with people. You're together both sides of the aisle. And yet, to your point about what happened in 2020, and I guess the number, right, 18 GOP state attorneys, a general filing lawsuits. Ultimately, those lawsuits, what happened? What did the filing of those lawsuits do?
So by and large, the state-level lawsuits were, you know, found to be baseless and meritless, and they were largely tossed in various ways. The case went up all the way to the Supreme Court, led by Texas. And not every one of my Republican colleagues joined, but 18 of them did. And, you know, it goes without saying that while I do a lot of business with them, many of them are my friends and colleagues. I thought that was wrong, and I thought that was an attack on our country and our democratic institutions and an attack on our republic. And that's what I said then, and if they do it again, I'll say it again, and I will fight them tooth and nail. The Supreme Court, in its wisdom in that moment, said, yeah, you know what, we're not going to hear this case, and they tossed it. That was that Supreme Court. I don't know about this Supreme Court. But I think that that Supreme Court understands their duty to help preserve the union. And if that sounds extreme to you, Bridget, that we're having this conversation on WICC right on a Wednesday afternoon, and if I'm using strong language that strikes your listeners as being a bit dramatic, I'm sorry, that's where we are.
Attorney General, I'm not sure that it does really yeah. shock anybody. I mean, you talk to people, and again, there's an exhaustion factor at play, I think, yeah. here. People understand that this has been, you know, it's been a rough campaign. And I think a lot of people are really wondering, well, you know, we were talking about this with our last guest. When are we even going to know? When are we even going to know the results? And
yeah,
and, yeah.
I think we'll know on Tuesday night. That doesn't mean anybody's going to concede. But I think we're going to know because, you know, I tend to think this is sort of the James Carville school now. I think Carville's gone back and forth, but, you know, he has said that he thinks it's going to break one way or the other, and that he doesn't think it's realistic that the swing states let's call it seven swing states, are going to go 4-3, right? It's not going to, I just think, you know, by demographic, voters are going to go, you know, suburban white women are going to go, you know, the way they go in Pennsylvania, as they will in Michigan, you know, and in Arizona. I just think, you know what I'm saying? I just think that if people are going in a certain direction, even if they live in different states, that they're going to tend to do the same thing.
And we are lucky enough to have with us today live on Newsline the Connecticut State Attorney General William Tong. Thank you for hanging during the break there. And just before the break, we were talking about the battleground states. And I want to be clear what you're saying, because I haven't really heard this on the part of anybody analyzing the election. You feel that the battleground states are going to go one way or another based on an issue. Is that a good way to sum it up, or no?
Not based on an issue, but I just tend to look. There's obviously a huge difference between us and Arizona, right, or us and Texas, and us and California. And I'm not saying there aren't differences between the swing states, between North Carolina and Pennsylvania or Michigan. However, I do think that to a great extent, elections have been nationalized, right? Back in the old days, Tip O'Neill said all politics is local. And some people say now, these days, all politics is national, right? And so, you know, suburban, let's just take suburban white women as a category, right? A constituency. If suburban white women in Westport, Connecticut, are energized in and they're voting on a host of issues, but let's acknowledge that reproductive freedom is a big one, right? And the fall of Roe versus Wade. You know, those same issues resonate with white suburban women in suburban Detroit, and they resonate with white suburban women in suburban Charlotte. And so I just think that those forces are national, and it's why you saw, you know, big majorities in Ohio and Kansas, for example, Republican states that voted to preserve choice and reproductive freedom, even though those are very deep red states, or at least, you know, Kansas is. And so I just think that those forces predominate in the swing states, and which is why I think the swing states are going to go one way or another.
Interesting.
I'm not suggesting that it will be blowouts in those states.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that will happen, but I am saying that I think if Pennsylvania goes one way, I think Michigan will go the same way.
Okay. All politics being national these days. Nonetheless, let's talk about local politics. Let's talk about Connecticut a little bit more. And can we be can we take heart when we cast our vote in Connecticut that everything's okay, that the ballot is secure, that our election can be, as I think you once said, our election is just going to be boring here in Connecticut. We want it to be that, right?
Look, yes. I have only had, except for when I'm on the ballot, but I have only had election boring election days. Now, does that mean things don't happen? Of course not, right? And we've had problems in Bridgeport. Everybody knows that. We've had problems with wet ballots. When I first got elected in 2018, it rained, and ballots got wet in cities. And that was a problem. So, look, the fact that things happen in elections because they're big, human-run, you know, processes with lots of people doesn't mean that they're fundamentally unfair or they lack integrity or that they're unreliable. Connecticut elections are boring because they're reliable. Because the Secretary of the State and the town clerks and the registrars do a great job, and they've done it over and over and over again. So, you know, I always say, like, you know, my hope is that on election day, I've got nothing to do but vote.
Right. Right.
That said. Nobody calls.
Yeah. Let it be a boring day. We like right. boring. We like peace. That said, can we assume that there will not be any legal challenges to the vote in Connecticut? You mentioned,
you know.
Go ahead.
I don't think we can say that. Mm-hmm. And, we have some tight races. And I think that this national playbook of challenging results legally, even when they're not really in dispute, something they could try here. So we have some tight races, including in the 5th Congressional District. There's no doubt about that. And, I've said that everybody needs to be careful, meaning, right, let's just make, even though elections are boring and well-run here in Connecticut, let's make sure that this year they're even better run than before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's leave nothing to chance.
Even more of a snooze fest.
Correct.
One other thing, Attorney General Tong, what do you make of the good turnout with early voting? What do you think that says about voters?
Well, I think, number one, I think people are really engaged. And, I was saying to somebody the other day, somebody said something about low information voters. And I said, excuse me, who are those people? Like, in this environment, everybody is a high information voter. Okay. That doesn't mean that they get good information. Okay. There's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there.
Or echoey information, right?
Echo chamber, mm-hmm. right? Information. Yeah. And we're guilty of that at times in Connecticut. But that I think people who are voting are engaged, they're energized, and they have a lot of information. And so I think, Connecticut's turnout, I actually don't know the stats in terms of how we fare relative to 20 years ago, but it just feels a heck of a lot like people are more energized and more involved than they've ever been before.
Yeah, and that can only be a good thing. We did have a story earlier in the week about, I guess it was 500-plus voters. I guess they got the wrong ballots in Stonington. I'm not trying to make any trouble here, but is that the sort of thing that could create a challenge down the line, or is it just a blip?
Yeah, I don't want to prejudge because I don't know the facts of that case. And, apart from what I said earlier about wanting a boring election day, I could get drawn into something, so it's important for me not to comment on a specific situation.
Understood.
Except to say that stuff happens.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me. People make mistakes. They make clerical errors. They're human beings running elections. There's some tolerance in our system for that, which is why we have recounts, right? Which is why we have all the sort of internal controls with the Secretary of the State, which is why we have the ability to check voter rolls and to make sure that people are properly registered to vote. All of those things, people think I think some people think that it's the Wild West out there. It is not at all the Wild West.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
We've been doing this for more than 200 years, number one. And number two is, we do this over and over again every year.
Right.
Not every 4 years, every year.
Right. And by the way, I should mention in that case in Stonington, the Secretary of the State, Thomas, and you've mentioned her, she did say that the ballots were sequestered, that voters would be able to recast their vote. So just to clarify that. But I wish we were not out of time, but we are. And I can only say back to the beginning of our conversation, I hope this is the first of many here on WICC.
Good.
Wonderful to
Look
chat with
to
you. We thank you so
Thanks.
Much.
Thanks All right. so much. Bye-bye.
Connecticut State Attorney General William Tong. Let's shift our focus right now on Newsline and talk about COVID. Yeah, it's still out there, right? And to have you rolled up your sleeve for the latest vaccine. I was a Girl Scout. I did. I got that and the flu shot on the same day. And no after effects. It was just fine. I hope it protects me through the holidays from any and all bad things. Joining us next on Newsline is Dr. Jeannie Kincare, president of Yale New Haven Health, urgent care. Doctor, great to have you here on the show.
Thanks, Bridget, for having me.
All right, so let's talk about these new CDC guidelines. And I guess, Doctor, we do tend to hear that headline a lot, new CDC guidelines. But this one is really important. And tell us about it, if you would. I understand the CDC is saying we need an additional COVID vaccine for people 65 plus. Is that correct? Tell us more.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it's been known now for at least a year. That the COVID virus changes so fast. And we've got these updated vaccines that are being updated yearly so that we can have the best match possible. And what we found is that the protection is waning in those older than 65 or those who are otherwise immunocompromised. And so they've made the recommendation that those folks need two vaccines in a single year. And so that's what this recommendation is saying.
Okay, so let's say I'm 65 and older. Is this vaccine going to go after a specific variant, or does it cover a bunch of them?
So it's a good match for the circulating variants that are out now and when they produced the virus. So it should cover multiple strains of the that are falling within the strain of circulating COVID virus right now.
Okay,
and then we'll be protected for a good. So they're asking folks to kind of get two vaccines within a 1 year period, so about 6 months apart. If you've had a vaccine within the year already, and you're meeting that criteria of being over the age of 65 or immunocompromised.
Okay, so 65 plus set, if you get one this fall, then in 6 months from now, you should go back?
Yes, go back and get a second. Yep.
Okay. And in terms of the vaccine that you should get right now, is there an optimal time, Doctor? You know, I said a moment ago that I got my updated vaccine. I wanted to make sure I was protected before the holidays. But I guess how close can you cut it when it comes to getting that vaccine?
Well, you really want a good 2 weeks of time for the vaccine to create the immunogenicity in the body. So don't wait until the day before you're about to see a bunch of people and put yourself at risk. Have at least 2 weeks in your pocket from having the vaccine to being in that high risk exposure period. So I would recommend, anybody who hasn't received their vaccines, now is a really good time to get the flu and COVID vaccine as we get into the respiratory season and get closer to the holidays. So if you haven't gotten it, get it this week or next week.
Try to get it done. Yeah. And it's okay to do the twofer, right? To do the flu and the COVID at the same time, because I think some people wonder, and I thought about this, does that mean that if I have any kind of a reaction, it's going to be twice the reaction because I'll have the reaction from the flu shot and from the COVID shot?
It's not necessarily. So what we know is that when you get a vaccine, it heightens your body's reaction to immunity. And that's actually what you want when you get a vaccine. So getting one vaccine and then a second vaccine in the same on the same day is actually good because it increases your chance of uptake and creating that immune response. Huh. The side effects won't necessarily be double. If you separated them, you'd have side effects from one, and then the next time you got if you got COVID today and then 2 weeks from now got flu, you're going to get a reaction, which we expect from COVID vaccine, and then you're going to get a reaction from flu. But if you get them on the same day, you kind of get it over with.
Right. And does it, I have to ask this too, does it matter if you get one in each arm or if you get both vaccines in the same arm? Does that make any difference?
The research shows that actually if you get it in the same arm, you get a better response. So you don't want to go in the same exact spot, but in the same arm. So one a little higher, one a little bit lower.
Oh, wow. Okay. I guess I did one in each, but and I just thought, oh, no, now I'm going to have a little bit of soreness in both arms instead of just my left arm. But in any event, okay, that's great information. Now, what about younger people? What should they do? The people younger than 65?
So is it is recommended that anybody over age 6 months get a COVID vaccine. These vaccines are, or should be, at least annual. So just similar to the flu vaccine, it's a new formulation every year that targets the circulating virus. And so if you haven't had your COVID vaccine this year, you should get one this season. The new vaccine came out in September, so it's a good idea to get that vaccine this season. And we're entering the respiratory season now, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. You know, this is the time when we see an increase in respiratory viruses. That includes COVID, flu, RSV, the common cold. And so as we get into this season, we want to be the best, have the best protection that we can have, and that comes from immunization. So get your COVID vaccine, get your flu vaccine, and if you're eligible, the RSV vaccine is also recommended. Yeah, for certain age groups.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is the RSV, is that for an older age group that that's recommended?
Yeah, so RSV vaccine is routinely recommended for those over 75. And then for folks between the ages of 60 and 75, if they have an increased risk for severe disease, like a respiratory issue or a cardiac issue or other chronic illnesses, those folks are at increased risk for complications. And so they're also recommended to get the vaccine. So that's okay for the age group between 60 and 75.
And if you're immunocompromised, right? I mean, that you have to keep up with this, yes?
That's right. That's right. Immunocompromising conditions include things like cancer, and if you're on immune modulating drugs for some autoimmune diseases, or if you're a transplant patient that's on immune modulating drugs, those are, you know, really put you at risk for disease. And so vaccination is very, very important for that group.
Right. And CDC also with a recommendation about pneumococcal vaccine. What is the recommendation there? And what illness is that vaccine supposed to stave off?
Good question. So last week, the advisory committee recommended decreasing the age, which for many years has been 65 and older for the pneumococcal vaccine. They recommended decreasing the age to 50 and older. So that vaccine is to prevent the infections from streptococcus pneumonia or pneumococcal bacteria. And that can cause pneumonia, but it also can cause meningitis, bacteremia. In little kids, we see it cause it as a major cause of ear infections. We see sinus infections from that. But in the older age group, it's really can be very severe and can lead to some serious infections and complications, including death.
So they're now saying anybody 50 and older should go ahead and get that.
That's right.
That's interesting because, you know, I feel like I get so many texts from the pharmacy saying, you know, like either like, good job, you got your COVID vaccine, or you still need to get this vaccine. And it gets a little bit tough to navigate. You know, I thought I was all caught up, but unfortunately, I am not younger than 50. So maybe I have to roll up my sleeve again. Is that something that you can get when you get the other vaccines, when you get the COVID or the flu?
You know, you can, but this isn't necessarily something that I would say, oh, geez, I need to run out and get it right away. I would say it is, you know, this is one of those vaccines that you only need one injection of. So this is not one that you need to get annually. So, you know, it is respiratory season. To have the best protection, you might want to have it. But if you don't have time or it doesn't line up along with the other vaccines, this one can wait, but you should have it. You know, this is one of those things that when you're going for your annual primary care visits to talk about what vaccines do I need to get caught up.
Right.
And it can be given with other vaccines. So that is a good side. It doesn't have to be given on its own.
And back live on Newsline with Dr. Jeannie Kincare, president of Yale New Haven Health Emergency Care. We were talking before the break that sometimes it can feel a little bit overwhelming when you think about the vaccines that you need to get. Doctor, do you think that we need a better system? I mean, it does feel like getting a COVID shot is sort of an annual ritual. And now I guess it should be for a certain age group, should be a biannual task. I don't know. Do you think things need to be sorted out any better than they are right now?
You know, I think there's a lot of improvement that can be done. I think, first of all, a lot of education needs to happen. I don't think patients necessarily understand what vaccines are out there, what they're due for, how to get that information to patients is really challenging. You know, people get their news from different outlets. They get their health information from different outlets. What we try to do in the primary care field is follow these types of standards. So we're trying to say, look, these are kind of routine standard recommendations, and the primary care physician is tasked with seeing the patient on a regular basis and following up with the patient for things that they need, whether it's a screening test for cancer or it's a vaccination to keep their patients healthy. And I know a lot of patients don't have primary care doctors, right, or don't routinely follow with a primary care doctor. And that's what we do in urgent care, is we see patients kind of episodically. And so in the urgent care visit or an emergency visit, it's also a great opportunity to look at what the patient's history has been and make those recommendations for vaccination if needed as well. But as you've said, you're getting messages from the pharmacy now, too, which is awesome. You know, here's another channel where you can get your information from and get ticklers and reminders about things that you're due for, like certain vaccines. And so I think it's important that the advisory committee is making these recommendations, because that is what then leads to these guidelines and recommendations and ticklers that you're going to get from your caregivers. And hopefully that helps to get the word out there so that we can protect as many people as possible.
Yeah, they are helpful. I mean, you get a text and you pay attention, right? I read a statistic, doctor, that as of mid-October, and you would certainly know more about this, the CDC says only 12% or something got the most recent vaccine. I hope I'm not mischaracterizing that statistic at all. But I guess the point being, it seems like maybe people were not jumping at the chance to get this new COVID vaccine. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, you know, I think there's some vaccine fatigue. People are, you know, like, I got my vaccines. You know, there was this big rush to get the vaccines when the pandemic started, and there was, you know, a very heightened awareness. And I think, unfortunately, many people felt like, okay, well, now I'm vaccinated and I'm not going to continue to get vaccinated. Or some people mistakenly think I had the illness and therefore I don't need to get the vaccine. What we know is that the vaccine helps even though you've had the illness, and that the immunity does wane because this virus is so rapidly changing, so that, you know, once your body encounters it one time, it can still encounter it another time and not be immune because of how much it changes. So the vaccine helps to improve the immunity and helps to characterize that immunity as most recent. So whatever you're faced with in the near future will be a better match, and your body's going to have a better immune response to it.
So bottom line, doctor. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, uh-huh. I think patients are tired of COVID. They're tired of vaccines. They're tired. But this is not going away. It is part of what we're going to have to face year in and year out. We clearly are starting to see these seasonality for these illnesses clearly defined in our region. And to best protect yourself, the vaccines are the best form of protection over anything else.
And, you know, doctor, I was just going to say, and not to sound like a goody two shoes here, but I mean, really, it took like maybe 10 minutes out of my life to go to the pharmacy and get protection from two things that I do not want to get. In particular, I do not want to get it when my kids are coming home for the holidays and family and friends are visiting. It's just not that big a deal. Just go do it. Get the shot, right?
It's not a big deal, and it doesn't just protect you, right? But it's going to protect the people around you. And you would be devastated if you transmitted some deadly illness to one of your loved ones. You know, if you can prevent it, let's prevent it. So I agree.
Well said. Doctor, what a pleasure to have you here on the program. We thank you so much. Dr. Jeannie Kincare, president of Yale New Haven Health Urgent Care. Hope to have you back on the show sometime very soon, doctor. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. You as well.